you're an early stage Web3 founder, apply to our award-winning accelerator program, Basecamp at outlierventures.io/basecamp. We write your first $50,000 check and give you access to 200 mentors, including many of the leading Web3 founders, and a network of 1,000 of the world's leading investors and exchanges. We've helped over 30 startups from 15 countries from all around the world raise $130 million in growth funding and can help you fast-track product market fit and, where relevant, the launch of your token economy. So today I'm really happy to welcome Alexander Mitrovic, founder of Unique Networks. Welcome, Alexander.
Thank you, Jamie. Nice to be here.
So we've, of course, announced that we're working with you at Diffusion Live last week, which was, middle of April 2021 for people listening to this, 2021 for people listening to this somewhere in the future. But here we're going to go in a much more kind of deep dive as to what you're up to at Unique Networks. So Unique Networks is the NFT chain for Kusama and Polkadot, the parachain. And, you know, really, the reason why we've got you on the show, beside the fact that, of course, everybody's really excited and interested in what's happening in the Polkadot ecosystem, is that NFTs are going prime time, huge volumes, requiring lots of layer two workarounds for, you know, the scaling problems that come with Ethereum one as it is. And, you know, of course, there are a number of new solutions coming to market like Flow, but right now, most people are stuck with Ethereum and working within its limitations. And so, you know, you're very much seen as the big NFT play within the Polkadot and Kusama ecosystem. And we'll talk a little bit about the overlap or the differences between those two. And, you know, you yourself have over 20 years within the IT industry. You built a company called Bluxoft from 30 to 2,000 employees, and, you know, Unique Networks, you've got a similarly rapidly growing team. And the project Unique Networks was the Hackusama Hackathon winner. You actually won two awards, winner for Build a Blockchain, winner for Community Choice. And you're very deeply integrated into the Web3 Foundation ecosystem and, of course, Polkadot and Kusama's ecosystems. You're an ambassador for Polkadot and a member of the Kusama NFT strategy team. So that all said, let's go into your background a bit. So, you know, if I look at LinkedIn and from what I know of you, you know, having worked with you in a relatively short period of time, several weeks now, you know, I can see kind of abbreviated kind of a background on something like LinkedIn. From what I could see, there was a company called Fame back in the day, now SunGuard. You were working there. You did 9 years at Luxoft, as I mentioned, at the top end from 2002 to 11. You were an EIR entrepreneur in residence at IBS Holdings for 3 years, leading you up to 2016, where you're now at Usetech. And out of Usetech came Unique Networks, and Unique Networks leverages and builds upon the brilliant team that you've got there. And for context, Usetech has over 300 employees. You've achieved over 1,000 projects that have been delivered, 5 R&D locations, I believe primarily Eastern Europe and the Baltics, right?
Right.
But could you tell us about your journey into blockchain? So, you know, through the IT industry, I guess more generally, into blockchain, and then I guess, you know, what led Usetech to decide to, I guess, put so much resource onto looking to achieve the NFT parachain?
Yeah, thank you, Jamie, for that beautiful introduction. Listening into it is pleasant. Anyway, so as you mentioned, I started my IT career in New York, then moved on to software development, a firm that was small at the time, Luxoft, and then I was part of the team that built it into a unicorn. It got sold last year for $1.3 billion, I believe. So I started my career in that way in an enterprise space, learned the ropes of IT industry with some of the leading companies in the world, investment banks, some very cool product companies, small and big, and some small that became big. So I decided I was an entrepreneur from the beginning, actually before the IT. I was working a little bit in my family-owned company and have history of entrepreneurship there. So I always wanted to come back to it. And that's what I was doing at IBS Holding. And then joined my good friend from Luxoft days at Ustech. He started it back in 2006 as a software development company to kind of create global operations. And by that time, market for software development was very fragmented and competitive. So I decided to focus on some of the emerging technologies. I was researching a lot of them and decided to focus solely on blockchain, which this was 2016, it was early days. Some of friends I knew were kind of getting into it, and we're talking about smart contracts, Ethereum hitting $90 and things like that. But more importantly, the decentralization aspect of it and the potential to disrupt financial services, which I knew as an industry very well. And I realized how ripe for disruption it was, and that blockchain actually was and is a good technology to do it. So within Ustech, we created the blockchain lab. I had Greg, who's now our CTO, join me back in 2017. And we did a number of projects on various blockchains for clients across the globe. So we first built on Ethereum, of course, but then on many other blockchains as well. Worked on Cosmos, on NEM, many others. And then we came across Polkadot about 2 years ago. So this was early 2019, spring. And at that time, Polkadot was in the middle of building. There were some components, but then there's many things missing. They had the very, Parity has a very nice organization around building and supporting the ecosystem right from the beginning. Really, I give them kind of head down for doing that job. That's why Polkadot today is behind Ethereum, the most popular in the development community globally. So we started doing infrastructure project, learning the ropes there. And did five different projects as part of grants. I believe we are second largest grant recipient in the ecosystem. And then at the same time, we did a few projects in an NFT space on Ethereum. And we figured, hey, Polkadot ecosystem is completely missing that piece. And it looks like the technology is really, really interesting for something, building something that is completely different. So we started diving into that early, late 2019. And then in early 2020, we built the first NFT palette. And only by building it, we realized how powerful and promising that solution is. So we decided to jump all in and kind of focus on building the NFT parachain that will become the next generation foundation for the solutions to come.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about your journey and certainly why we were very keen to back you is just the depth of technical talent in your team, right? Because one of the biggest challenges for any project coming to the space, you know, it's very easy to raise money now. Money is not the problem. The problem is, even if you've got millions, where do you find the talent? You know, there just isn't the development talent, especially to build something as complex as the NFT parachain. So could you just give us a little bit more context as to the depth of relevant technical experience within the team that you've got?
I absolutely agree with you. Money can be printed. tokens even can be created, right? But people take time to learn and gain experience. So as I mentioned, we created a blockchain lab almost 5 years ago, and we were slowly learning and expanding. And one of the things we did on purpose is rotating the personnel so that we have more and more people kind of learn a little bit here from that angle, from that angle. We were doing some solutions just to gain exposure to certain parts of technology and so on. So it takes time. Everything in the blockchain space is very different from the other parts of the IT industry. Blockchain is reminds me very much of embedded development, for example, in airplanes. Back in Luxoft, we worked with Boeing and other aviation companies, and there you cannot have bugs, okay? Now, in web development, people laugh when you say that, but that's how it is in blockchain. If you have a bug, then you have an exploit that can cost you the whole thing. So, so it is different, very different, and it takes really time and step by step. It's not really kind of learning theoretical. You have to have people learn on the job. So you do need to train them on step by step. And that's what we did. So these 4 years of experience in doing that and 2 years in Polkadot has enabled us indeed to have pretty deep bench relative to the overall community. So we have now a team of 15, and actually people who have worked on our stuff is more than 20 by now. And we are growing that. So again, the technology is not simple. Rust is pretty good language, but has a very small global development talent pool. And a Substrate is even smaller, of course. So the only way to really grow it is to teach people, have them contribute step by step, and it takes time, simply. So, you know, that's one of the advantages I realized we have very early on. So we really pressed on it, and we built something that it will take anybody else 2 years to build.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there are at least one other project I know right now, which has raised money to build a NFT parachain. But of course, you know, they've still got all the work to do. No amount of money is going to necessarily accelerate that curve. So you've definitely got a good head start there. So let's set the scene, right? So everybody's probably aware, who listens to this anyway, is probably aware NFTs have gone mainstream, and most people who have any interaction with them will understand the limitations of Ethereum to support that, at least, you know, for now. Can you talk us through what's wrong with the status quo currently?
Honestly, I don't even think NFTs have gone mainstream yet. This is kind of weird. NFTs are about as mainstream as Bitcoin was back in, not even 2017, maybe even before that. People are only starting to hear about it. This is kind of hello world type of stage we are at, very, very early. And that is because if you take a look at it, NFTs are tokenized unique assets, whatever asset is. Unique assets, just like in other parts of technology, blockchain is a database, okay? When you have unstructured data, you need much more powerful technologies to manage that data. Same thing is in blockchain. Same thing you had with internet, for example. You had Web 1 and then a move to Web 2, which allowed personalization and all the powerful IT companies that we have today as a result of that. What we have in the technology landscape now, the second generation blockchains, is basically Web 1.0 in terms of, for the purposes of NFTs. You have a flat economic models, so very stringent. So basically, when you want to kind of make something that people start to use, they have to pay for every action they do. Okay. So if you want to mint NFT tokens, you have to pay gas in that cryptocurrency of that blockchain. If you want to buy that NFT, you have to pay for it, but then you also have to pay gas for that transaction. Then you have to pay for anything you want to actually do with that. So, you know, it's one thing if you buy some file that you store somewhere and that's it. But if you want to play a game, you have to pay every time you press a button, okay? Which is very good for protecting security of a blockchain, but is very bad for actually using things. Stringency of that economic model is kind of a big, big friction. That's something that with having people to have to know blockchain, they have to know private keys, they have to know how to get tokens for gas, they have to know how to spend it, how to sign transactions, et cetera, et cetera. All of that basically makes the NFT space today just a very niche market that appeals only to real crypto experienced people who are kind of in there for the longer term and just want to have some fun. Okay. So it's basically entertainment for a very small group of people. What we are starting to see is attempts to kind of change that. So the biggest successes of late in the NFT space, those that make kind of headlines in the media, are hiding the transactions behind, you know, the they're trying to hide the blockchain below and kind of expose only things that people can understand. So, but actually, technologically, they can work only they can hide it only if that's a buy transaction, because with that, okay, we'll pay for the gas. But if you want to have a game where you play a game for a month or two or three, and only then your user buys something, then we're still having problems. So that's number one thing we want to solve. And of course, there are a bunch of others. There's, of course, scalability. There are a number of blockchains that are solving that problem, but it still is the problem to solve. And as I mentioned, hiding the blockchain piece, both for users, but also for developers too. So among millions of developers in the world and hundreds of thousands of them in the gaming space and all the things, use cases around NFTs that can be relevant, very few know blockchain and understand blockchain. So you need to kind of make sure that that you have an on-ramp for developers as well. So those are kind of the key things that are wrong with the ecosystem. And of course, there is Ethereum gas problem, but that's just the result of the structure. Ethereum today is the blockchain for DeFi, okay? And just like in the real world, Wall Street guys and kind of full of money, they can pay whatever, you know, whatever money is needed for the gas. So they take all the everything for themselves. And basically, NFTs do not have space on there. The only way to resolve that problem is to have a separate chain for specifically that purpose.
So let's just do a very quick 101 on Polkadot and its kind of architecture, because I mean, we of course have had we've had guests on who have gone much deeper into it, but the audience may have not listened to it. So I think it'd be great to just kind of do a very quick 101 on, you know, parathreads, parachains, the auctions, and of course, this relationship between Polkadot and Kusama.
Okay, so Polkadot is, in my view, a third generation blockchain. It is something completely new and on really the next level. And there are two reasons for that. One is that it is very, very powerful. People who are building in really knew what they're doing, and there's lots of them. And then secondly, more even important for me, is that it's very flexible blockchain. As I mentioned on Diffusion, there are 10 ways you can do anything in Polkadot. So that flexibility is very important when it comes to solving many technical issues. So just the first example, Polkadot and Kusama, they are relay chains, which means they don't do anything except for shared security, mining, and they have messaging protocols for everything around them. And then it's the parachains that actually do something. So it's parachains having smart contracts. It's parachains having bridges to other chains, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cosmos, whatever. Parachains that have DeFi applications, and it's parachains that have NFT capabilities. Parachains are separate blockchains. They have their own economic ecosystem that is not dependent on anything outside except for the cost of the parachain slot, which is basically the cost of mining. So the mining calculation is different. It doesn't work like in Bitcoin or in Ethereum or in EOS, where pay everything to the miners, where miners mine the block and you have to pay them the whole inflation and then all transaction fees and so on. Mining is done by Polkadot and you just lease the slot, you pay for that slot and your mining is basically solved. So we are completely free to design our own economic ecosystem. The way to fit the applications that we want to have. And NFT applications, in our view, require cheap transactions and a lot of them. We need to have, and we have, a parachain that is very scalable, can do like 25,000 transactions a block, which is every 6 seconds. And they have to be cheap, so that can be massive scale. We envision NFTs to have millions of users. Good games do have millions of users each, let alone many games. In this way, structurally, Polkadot is relay chain, and then we as a parachain, we decide whichever way we want to design the economics of our parachain, and then to give it even better future and to future-proof things, you can change anything in our parachain with the kind of council decision. So, and you can do it on a fly without a hard fork. So basically, if 5 years down the road, we realize we have to make transactions cheaper, we can do that. Okay. Actually, as a matter of fact, that's what just happened on Kusama. The transaction fees got up to like a dollar or something like that, and they decided to drop that by 50 times, okay? You know, that's stopping the transaction volumes from happening. And that flexibility is something that is extremely, extremely powerful within the Polkadot ecosystem. As for your last question, the difference between Kusama and Polkadot is, my guess is that Parity, the main kind of developer of both, has been burned hard with the bug they had in their multisig wallet a few years ago. And they decided to devote a lot of attention to security and making sure that the blockchain works as intended. So what they decided at one point is to release Kusama as kind of early bird staging network, they call it Canary Network, which will basically test everything that comes new. They will try it out and only things that really work. And after they have proven to work, they go on Polkadot. Before that, they don't. So this way they protect Polkadot from any unexpected bugs and problems and so on. And Kusama's brand is Expect Chaos. So, you know, everybody's warned that, you know, anything can happen on that blockchain. It can kind of stop suddenly and so on. And actually, Kusama was generated as airdrop for DOT holders originally. So it didn't cost anything to buy into it. Anybody kind of buying it now, that's another question, but that's the kind of the conscious decision. But originally it was a gift to everybody who owned DOTs. So basically that's the main difference between the two.
Yeah, and I've had Gavin Wood on, several months ago, and yeah, he himself described it. It's probably a bit of an out of date one now, but it was like Litecoin was to Bitcoin. So I think that makes a lot of sense. So let's get into. I think it's been really helpful to most people who'd be listening to this. It's a very, very straight and simple explanation of course, what can be quite complex and to some people mystifying. But I think you did a great job there. So let's jump into Unique Network. So as you said, you've been building for how long now?
Since December 2019. So it's almost a year and a half now.
Right. You know, so a huge amount of time, as you say, a lot of developer talent over there dedicated to this. And, you know, you've built an impressive stack with several elements to it, several layers to it. Could you walk us through the stack, I guess, sequentially? I don't know if that works, whether we would kind of move up from the bottom of the stack upwards, or I don't know how you visualize it.
Visualize it as it is now. So the main component of Unique Network is the NFT palette. Palette is what they used to call module. That is the core. It has the most functionality. That is basically that contains everything that operates around the NFTs, creating them, so minting them, defining their metadata, defining ownership rights, administrative rights around the things that we call collections. So there is, that structure as well, and many, many other things that are kind of part of that palette. Then besides the NFT palette, we currently have a smart contract palette inside, which is ink. This is a native substrate smart contract language. It's based on Rust. And then, connecting the two isn't easy at all. We were the first to connect Ink palette in its current implementation to be able to communicate with any other palette. That in itself in the early days was a challenge and still is a challenge to many. And then, we are preparing many other palettes. So right now we're putting in EVM, we're putting in Ethereum palette and Frontier. Those are basically components needed for full Ethereum compatibility. This was developed by Parity. Making them work on NFT level and with our palette and so on, that's what we are doing. And then, so these are things that go inside the blockchain, okay? And then to make them usable for NFT use cases, we had to build a number of components that don't really go inside the blockchain, but that are necessary. So first was the wallet. You need to have a wallet to operate, to transfer NFTs, to seed them, to do whatever you want with them. There is also a kind of an Explorer API around things that is something that's shared across all substrate chains. We call it Ops UI. We have adopted that to our needs as well. We have also minting solution. We have a gallery and we have a marketplace. All of these components are available to anybody who wants to use them white label. So you basically, if you're creating any kind of gallery or game or whatever you want to use for NFTs, you can take any of them, put them inside your game. I was just off the phone, for example, with a company that's making a game, and I told them, okay, here's your marketplace. You can sell your NFTs right from your game. You don't need anything from us. You don't need anything from anybody. Just take it, put it in, put in your logo, and if you want to change the logic, just go ahead and do it. But basically, the way, and since we are still in testnet, we have built a bridge to Kusama, which allows basically trading to happen with real economic value. So they can sell, even in testnet, they can sell stuff for real money. I believe that Bridge to Kusama is still the only live application commercial that I've seen in the ecosystem. Must have forgotten something, but these are kind of the important things.
Yeah. So, you know, a huge amount there. And you kind of alluded to your approach, right, in that the idea is that you're building a load of middleware, a load of tooling that would allow a dApp developer to, in an NFT context, of course, to pretty much self-service. And I think, you know, whenever I talk to you, you're always at pains to emphasize that, you know, you believe the success of Unique Networks will be in its decentralization and its ecosystem. I think Subtrapunks is a really good example of that. Could you talk us through that almost happy accident, right?
It is happy accident. I'm still kind of looking for a real name of the person who's behind that accident, but okay. So yeah, as you mentioned, we released the testnet in scope of Hakusama, the first hackathon that Kusama had. This was in August 2020. And in order to show to non-technical judges on the panel for that hackathon that the chain really works, we wanted to create something that they can actually do with it, okay? We had a number of ideas. I wanted to do Burning Man, but we didn't have time for that. So Greg, our CTO, came up with an idea to create Substrapunks as a tribute to original CryptoPunks. So they did it very quickly. It took him and the designer a couple of days of work to do it. And again, this was the idea was to demonstrate to non-technical judges that the thing worked. And it worked. People loved it. And I guess that's why we got the community award as well, because everybody could play with it. You know, people started claiming them. It was free. It was fun. Those punks are fun. It reminded them of the old days in Ethereum space when, you know, things were for free and et cetera, et cetera. But also it was important because it demonstrated kind of some of the deepest things we did, like a sponsorship of transaction fees. So if you take and transfer those punks, you don't need unique tokens to do that. Somehow, when we won that hackathon, some people have heard about it, and they started coming in and claiming the punks. There were 10,000 of them, as in the original ones, and they started to claim them more and more, and within like 3 days, they were all gone. I was like completely surprised to that. Greg and I looked this, you know, what the hell is happening? Everybody likes these punks. Then people started kind of telling us they're trading them. I was like, why are you trading them? What's, you know, who's paying for them? Why? I said, well, you guys are going to move them to the mainnet, will you? We said, okay, sure, we will. And then continue trading them. Then a few weeks later, somebody of the early kind of community members comes to us and says, guys, can you help us? Somebody just scammed me out of a couple of dozen bucks. At that moment, we knew that these things are worth something. So we created a marketplace. The marketplace that is based for the white label solution I just told you about. That marketplace, since November last year, so less than like 5 months or so, has had more than $1 million worth of transactions. And this is all happening with us still not having a single marketing person. We haven't spent a penny on marketing. We haven't spent a second on marketing. This is community being built by itself because there are so many people out there who first really like what Polkadot is doing, who have seen Substrapunks as kind of the early bird of NFTs on Polkadot. They are first live kind of application there. And they figured that that symbolism alone is worth the money they're paying for them. So for me, indeed, that is kind of the best example of organic community building that can happen only in, well, that can happen in blockchain space, that should happen in blockchain space, because blockchains are nothing if they're not a network of people who believe in what's happening in that community. So that is our approach, basically.
Yeah, so let's maybe extend that into gaming. I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier, and the world of play to earn, because you mentioned gaming a couple of times now, and I know the possibility, the current limitations of what's possible in NFTs severely restrict them in the gaming context, and you know what you built with Unique allows them to realize their full potential. So could you talk us through that, and I guess how they could feed into things like play to earn?
Well, ever since I've seen Sandbox, I was dreaming about kind of making something that will help the gamers out there really take that to execution. And to there's a lot of people who are kind of dreaming about how NFTs can kind of move from a game to game, how people can build stuff and then earn things. That's why I like Sandbox, because in there you can earn money first and then kind of spend it. The economics of Unique are such that it allows it completely to happen. So we can scale that to kind of any scale necessary, and we can scale that into games that are either much more complicated or much simpler, but basically that's where you can have people start playing the game, earn points, and you know, and feel richer by playing that. And you can monetize that later with, you know, different kinds of gaming economics that only gaming studios know how to deal with. They're usually good at that. So the idea here is to enable gaming studios to have complete freedom of monetization and of the economic model they can create. And basically, we built that.
Yeah, and I think that's really exciting, right? Because each of these games is a microeconomy, or you know, instance of the metaverse with a economic layer. And you know, the value of these games is how they design the incentives and disincentives and the underlying economics. So the greater freedom to experiment there, you can imagine the kind of use cases are going to get that much stronger. And are there any other kind of use cases, I guess, that are just prohibitive now, but that could only be possible at scale with something like Unique? So I'm thinking, you know, the music industry, music video streaming, where, you know, currently with that to be an NFT and it having to interact on chain, it just wouldn't be possible, right?
Would be possible, you have to pay $70 to play a song, but no, there are workarounds for that. That's exactly what there are workarounds. So NFT use cases, there are millions of them. I believe that identities should be on NFT technology. Real estate ledgers should be on NFT technology, simply because it just feels right. Okay. NFTs are tokenization of unique assets. Okay. But it will take time for, you know, millions of people to figure out the way how to do that. We are hoping we are giving kind of an important push in that direction. So just kind of a much smaller example that's already happening. There's a team started off on Kusama, made a Remark Up, that's the name, that basically they've created nested NFTs, okay? What that means is, and they're kind of porting that to Unique now. So with that, you can have very complex relationships between unique assets. You can create a game that has thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of assets inside, and that they're all intertwined in whatever way you want. The simplest way to describe it is to have generations. So, you know, grandparents, parents, kids, and then their kids, kids, and so on. That's something that CryptoKitties played with breeding. But this can take it to the whole another level. I'm thinking about, so what they built is, for example, eggs that hatch into birds who then give off offspring, but they become valuable if people, owners or others, give them emoticons. So they send them emotions, you know, we love you or whatever emotion you want, and they gain strength to that, okay? So this is the beginning of a gameplay that happens on chain, okay, that is real, works, and can have any layers of ownership nesting or relationships between them as you wish. So to create a network where you have, you know, the initial something being really interesting for millions of people, you know, you start kind of you can create a very strong following this way. Also, it can be used to create things like airdrops where in different ways. You can create a social network of NFTs, okay? That's the idea I had yesterday when talking to the Remark team. You can basically have NFTs liking each other or kind of, you know, laughing at each other, playing with each other. So one thing that we're going to play with is when we launch and we're going to port over CryptoPunks and we're going to have our SubstraPunks do something with them. I don't know. We'll see what. Dancing or kind of, I don't want to do breeding. That's boring. But you know, maybe fighting. Maybe I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean the mind boggles when you think about the possibilities. And I'd be amazed if anybody that's not working in the NFT space now isn't foaming at the mouth to think about, you know, what they could do here. So to wrap up, could you tell us, you mentioned you're at testnet now, could you tell us a little bit more about the roadmap for mainnet? And you mentioned a token in there, you know, your kind of thoughts on a timeline around TGE.
Well, the mainnet is basically ready. We have it ready since February. Kind of are going along with Rococo as it flies. That's the testnet for parachains. And then launching in the Polkadot Kusama ecosystems requires a PhD, basically, to figure it out. So we have plans A, B, and C for launch strategy. Plan A is to launch as a parathread to Kusama. Parathreads are basically parachains, but in pay-as-you-go model. They're kind of on a shared slot. They're not exclusive. Parity basically said they're going to kind of finish them off a month or two. Well, no, they said soon after they launched the parachains, or very soon thereafter. That's the quote. And what that means is a couple of months, basically. So we expect to see first parachain auctions fairly soon. I believe maybe in April, maybe May. But they're getting close. We expect to have then parathreads maybe a couple of months later. We can launch then. That's the plan A, because parathreads are fairly safe way to start. If we go just for as a parachain, then that's very risky when we are going to get the slot. Plus, there's economic kind of problems with that as well. The parachain slots are going to be very expensive initially, and you need to gather a lot of money for that. And that kind of money, I believe, we need to launch first. I prefer, so, you know, I was part of the 2017 ICO boom, and I was telling to myself always, if I launch blockchain, I want to do a public sale before we launch the chain. So that's kind of ideology that I have, I guess. Plan B is if the parathreads get delayed too much, then we can always launch as a standalone chain and then port over to a parathread or parachain. That will require management for the transition, which does have its risks. So I would prefer not to do it, but you know, those are manageable risks. If we decide to do it, then we'll prepare for it and manage it properly. And then option C is to go as a parachain, which is least likely simply because of expected very high cost, initial cost. And but that can be a viable option if for some reason the first two become unrealistic. So we expect to launch sometime this summer. My initial thoughts were June, but the parathreads are not yet kind of, parachains are not yet available, so parathreads aren't either, but we'll see. And then after that, what we want to do is run a public sale that of real utility token, and then go for a parachain slot on Kusama. And then when Polkadot starts having those, repeat the same thing.
Awesome. Alexander, really interesting stuff. Thanks for your openness and candidness in talking us through that. A lot of other founders would have given a a more evasive answer, but I think it's great to kind of lay out the options and you know, talk through the various contingency plans you have. So thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure people listening to this that are working in the NFT space will be as excited as I am about this project. Where can they find more about Unique Networks?
UniqueNetwork.io.
There you go. That easy. Awesome. Thanks for coming on. Really looking forward to see what you do this year.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate the chance. And yeah, thanks again for the opportunity. Cheers.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and share your feedback to help us reach as many people as possible with the important mission of Web3.